Blog Talk Radio.
Come on, baby, make it hot. Ride the cop till you hit the spot. Come on, baby, make it hot.
Doing it doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yay, bow, wow, yippee-yo, yippee-yo. Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yay, bow, wow, yippee-yo, yippee-yo.
And welcome to the Cackling Eco Hour here at Naked Soma. We're going to have a lot of this tonight, so I'm just going to hit Billow's rant and get myself unwound here.
Oh, man.
That's tomorrow. And that is it for us today.
Let's start at the end.
Okay, I don't know. Whatever it is, it's not right on the teleprompter. I don't know what that is. I've never seen that.
No, there it is. We are going to do Sting, yeah.
Okay, but... now, I can't read it. There's no words on it.
Okay.
Yeah. This was going on about 2 minutes ago before...
There's
Val
no words there to play us out. What does that mean, to play us out?
Yeah. She realized it was 9:01 and she hadn't dialed in yet, so the show can't start. So.
What is
for credit?
I don't know what that means, to play us out. What does that mean? To end the show?
Yeah.
I love when he tries to like refocus.
All right,
here.
Go.
In 5, 4, 3.
That's tomorrow, and
that's
that
tomorrow.
In 5, 4, 3.
It's like an answer trying to put the chain back on the bike.
And that is it for us today, and we will leave you with a... I can't do it.
Here he goes.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live. Fuck it. Do it live. I'll write it, and we'll
millions.
Do it live.
Millions.
Fucking
he's paid millions. He's like freaking rageaholic.
Man.
5, 4, 3.
That's tomorrow, and that is it for us today. I'm Bill O'Reilly. Thanks again for watching. We'll leave you with Sting and a cut off his new album. Take it away.
Oof.
You know, he lit that guy up. Was probably making like 20 grand, you know, like hold, you know, basically holding a freaking cue card or something.
Oh, man. Yeah. Wait, I got to get
here we
real
are.
Quick. Wait.
What?
Credit crunch.
There you go. Yeah, vote for that guy. He won't embarrass us too much. I might as well toss this out to you, Sapes, listening live or archiving in the middle of the night in your basement. A special SomaCast election night 2-hour spectacular, a SomaPetacular, going coast to coast with guests coming in from various regions of the country as we... take a look at the spin as it'd be going on the networks that night. You know, they've made the last two election nights an adventure, you know, calling states
mm-hmm.
early and things like that. So we figured, you know, you pop on around 11 o'clock when the West Coast is kind of closing down and we've got some people projecting and making mistakes, and we could just sit and profile the pundits as they insert foot in mouth and chew.
Right. And you guys should call in because... I'll have already taught that night and be half out of it, and Mark might need somebody to talk to while I fall
yeah,
asleep.
Yeah, I might be talking to myself, the mythical reader.
11-1.
Those of you now, if you were with us a couple weeks ago, when was it last week? When the hell did we do the World Series? Is that last week?
I think so.
Well, this mini game is on now. With the Game 5 resuming tonight, and the Filthies. I managed to scratch out a run there in the bottom of the sixth, the Vermin. But the Tampa Bay Rays, undaunted, came back and tied it in the top of the seventh. And now a runner on second and one out. So we'll keep you posted on that as we migrate through the hour. Those of you listening on the archive, of course, can mock me because you know the final score, you bastards. But, you know, this is what I'm interested in. Mano y mano.
Uh-huh.
Ground ball up the middle.
That.
Oh, Utley,
oh,
you
my.
Bastard. Has to eat it. Oh, it's on a plate. And he's what? He's out.
He's out.
No, son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch. Who made that throw, Utley?
That was insane. Look at that.
Look at this. He makes this backhand play. What does he do? He fakes the throw to first, and then he throws it home. Okay.
Well,
he's got to make a play. Look at this flying leap. Hey, tagged him on his fotch.
He did, right in the face, man.
Yeah, okay. 3-3, let's go to the bottom of the seventh, you rat bastards. We're going to play you all freaking night! Anyway, I'm not going to take that lion down. Hey, Utley had to make a great play. He wasn't going to get him at first. Exactly. Hey, it's 3-3. Let's keep playing. I think actually we're going to see Mr. Price come in the game now. They call me Mr. Tibbs. So he's coming in, and he's shut down Ronnie, that guy. I mean, he throws these sliders. I swear to God, it's like coming out of a BB gun. So we'll see what happens in the bottom. We'll keep you posted on that. We have a special guest tonight that's going to try and restore order here as the wheels have come off the show in the first 5 minutes. Yes, well, we'll be discussing a topic near and dear to your hearts as we steamroll through the election, fear. And and basically how it's sort of been draped over every aspect of human life. And we have, you know, certain parts of the country, we've clung to our guns and our Bibles, as Obama says. And other people have revolted in the streets, and we've had, one, two attempts to kill Obama this week?
Yeah, it's disgusting.
And, some dude, some eco out in Pennsylvania hung a Sarah Palin dummy out the window and you know, hung her in effigy.
Yeah.
Yeah, as part of his Halloween house decorations. Great.
Yeah, there you go. That's a nice decoration for you.
It's art. It's art, man.
It's nice.
He's got
nice
McCain
nice
coming out of the chimney in flames. That was
with his head on fire.
Yeah. Tremendous.
What's wrong with them?
Well, you know, it's eco. He's like, this is the way he's making a statement.
Okay, you know. Well, you could just, you know, vote.
Yeah, this conversation goes on in this dude's head a lot, this one here.
If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try again. If you need help, hang up and then dial your operator.
That's right.
A credit crunch.
Oh, come on. Oh, yeah. There's the next president. Cannot even put the English language on the ground.
Not happening.
Yeah, well. So that's what we're facing. We have a lot of things going on. You got a Halloween celebration. Why don't you give these sapes, before our guest joins us, the real, not the Charlie Brown story or some of the other ones you've heard, but the real story of Halloween from the pagan point of view.
Yeah, sure. It's called Samhain, which is spelled Samhain, S-A-M-H-A-I-N, but it's pronounced Samhain. And it actually comes from the Celtic calendar. It's the name of the month. And it's basically it's our new year.
Okay.
So it's when we go through our previous year, we think about what went on, and we set our goals for the upcoming year. And hopefully I'll be setting some goals. We're actually going to be sitting around a fire on November 1st. We're going to be celebrating. And
Does it have to do anything with harvesting?
This final harvest. We had a second harvest already. Was the last holiday. There's not much more being harvested now, but yeah, it depends on where you are. We have the year is in two halves. It's the dark half and the light half. So the entire year was considered the beginning of the dark half, so that the beginning of the light half comes with the Celtic New Year.
Hold on a minute.
All right, what happened?
We have one more left, and it's going to be off the wall.
Yeah, okay. So that's good. At least
Billy's
it's over.
The guy in second base.
That's right. That's
Pat
right.
Pat Burrell, the XO who swings in one arc. They managed to hit his bat. They call him Pat the Bat. Basically, see the swing he has here? No matter where the ball's pitched, this is the way he swings. And he managed to hit his bat. So another leadoff double for the Sillies.
My.
Annoy me to the point of banging my head against the wall for this hour goes. So, recapping your just my impression of the pagan thing is basically the way the year is framed, very similar to Mayan cultures, other early cultures. They really respected the fact that there were seasons and there were like different events.
That's right.
And they honored them. Some because they had the perspective that if they sort of honored the gods and appeased them, the gods would protect them and whatnot. And now we have security alarms and things like that.
Yeah. Well, on the opposite side of...
And look for razor blades and apples.
Yes. On the opposite side of Samhain is Beltane, which is in May, May Day.
Uh-huh.
And that's the whole fertility thing. So now we're celebrating death because as the plants die, the seeds are then, you know, in the ground for the next season. So you actually have to celebrate death to celebrate life. So that's part of
and
it
we,
also.
And we have a different aspect in this culture where death is something we dread. We have all kinds of myths and fears about it and live our entire life basically trying to put that in the darkest corner we can. So maybe we can figure this out with our guest, who here happens to be calling in now, I see.
Oh, I don't have
pop
it up
her up
there. Let me see.
From,
hold on.
All the way from Phoenix, Arizona, on the way to Pomona.
Woohoo!
We have Kay Randall May joining us now here on Naked Soma. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dr. Mark and Professor Bowell, I presume.
That's me.
That's right. You can presume all you want. She's right there. Yeah.
It's a pleasure to speak with you this evening.
Yeah, we're glad you're here.
Well, you're here to kind of restore order because this is a country basically on a very scary ride right now, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that, as you've communicated to me in some of the emails we've had going back and forth, is that. We've sort of become desensitized to fear. We look at fear as sort of part of American life, and it's sort of become embedded into almost every aspect of the culture, from the local news. Everything you encounter basically is to make you dread something, react to something. Even if you're not worried about it, I mean, every commercial on the radio I hear is about, you know, with the economy being down, it's all about, you know, oh, they're coming to get you, Barbara. You know, so it just seems like that way of causing people to sort of like be like pinballs has become the primary way that the culture communicates. So give us a little bit of your spin and how you understand fear.
Fear, of course, is a very healthy emotion. It's a great motivator. If we didn't have healthy fear, appropriate fear, we would be in great danger.
Mm-hmm.
We have to learn from our mistakes and things like touching a hot flame to fear those things. But what happens when we encounter something that's fearful is that emotions get stirred up and also our hormones begin to churn away and we get adrenaline. And it's the adrenaline and the other stress hormones which can be quite addictive. I believe it's this addictive quality which is what you were referring to, Dr. Mark. And the idea is that it escalates, as with any sort of thrill. When you are a child and 5 or 6 years old, which might have given you a thrill, is different from when you're a teenager of 15. And I can remember when I was a little girl and went to my first science fiction movie, and my father took me there, and we saw The Thing, and it was this plant that came from outer space. And now, if I were to see it, it would be totally absurd. It would be laughable. But when I was a child, I was frightened. And so it's this idea that what frightens us today is going to have to be magnified to frighten us 2 years from now. And so when we talk about this season, and I was listening to you talk a bit about this season, actually it was a season that originally was celebrated in ancient Scotland and Ireland for the living to encounter those who were no longer living. And, of course, great producer of fear is the idea of death, the unknown. When I look at this from the point of view of a intuitive, and, of course, I am a professional intuitive, a medical intuitive, and I look at the body's energy field clairvoyantly, and I look at the centers, you know, the chakra system, when we look at this, fear actually affects us a great deal in our first chakra. It affects all of the chakras, but especially the first, which is called the root or the basal chakra.
Yeah, it ungrounds us.
That's right. Fear is an emotion which makes us distort or distorts that chakra. And when that chakra becomes distorted, what happens is, just as you said, Professor Vile, we lose our grounding, our centering, our sense of other, you know, where we have our tribe, those people that are there for us. It can also have a tribal quality to it, though, like trick-or-treating, where people might go together. That's more of a tribal activity. It, so there is this mixture with this holiday that we call Halloween. It's not all fearful, of course. It's supposed to be more of a social thing. I think that it's not merely that that we're talking about, though. When we talk about fear per se, like frightening someone, causing them to be afraid, or especially causing a small child to be afraid, people don't realize that they're actually, in some cases, setting up that individual for greater desensitization to fear in their next experience.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what can cause some, you know, escalation. So if an individual sees Dracula walking down the street and he sees 10 Draculas walking down the street, then what's it going to take to, you know, get them, you know, with that same kind of level of adrenaline? It's going to be the blood and the gore. And I was watching on television where some of the costumes now that are being utilized, and these are by adults because they're costly things, but they are so gruesome and so over the line as far as I was concerned, that they get to the place where they really are, they're not something that I think is healthy. And some of the fright houses, you know, where people go and they are submitted to seeing some of these really, truly gruesome things. They were showing one place in California where they have acres upon acres of this, and they work all year to produce this. The reason is, of course, there's a lot of money that gets poured into this holiday. I think it's second only to Christmas in terms of the
amount of money. It's actually gaining on Christmas. The kids are into it from, you know, the middle of October on. There's definitely a fear business.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. And what can happen is, as I've seen in my practice, if say an individual becomes too desensitized to fear, then what can happen is that they will take more risks in their life in general. And this is then can contribute to all kinds of other risky behavior. But what's interesting also to me in my work as an intuitive is that sometimes when I source what some of the symptoms are in individuals that come to me, sometimes that can be generational. In other words, if a person's mother carries the person in their gestation period while she was pregnant, and she becomes particularly fearful, particularly upset, particularly under a lot of stress, that can have lifelong implications for the health of her child.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is another thing that we've been talking about, this biology of fear for a couple of minutes. You mentioned a little
right.
The spiritual side of it, and you can't divide those two things in a person's life, because the meaning that people put behind their fear-based experiences there's no logic that can undo it. I mean, you know, nightmares I had as a little kid, Count Chocula, things like that, just coming back. They shape that way that person grows and develops and the way they relate to other people. So you're always dealing with sort of the residue of the way fear has sort of kind of resided in that human being. And if, as you remove fear, what do you replace it with? And there's still that energy that you talked about, the chakra energy and like the old learning curve stuff, unconscious incompetence. Fear, when you encounter something novel, makes you discern, makes you kind of distinguish things because you're reorienting.
Right.
And then when you move through it, you have to get the excitement back because now you're safe. And, you know, in somatics, talk about things like nociception and proprioception and neuroception and allowing, being receptive to the environment so that you don't feel like the environment is, you know, where the boogeyman is. How do you do this without all the sort of the mythological stuff that goes on to sort of fill people's heads with a lot of false gods in a way, because what happens is, like with Santa Claus, Easter Bunny, all the other things of youth, as you get older, you know, traditional religions, they have their Santa Clauses, they have their demons and things like that, that still set up this game where there's good and evil, I mean, all the way up to the president. So you're always up in this sort of this two-dimensional map in a three-dimensional world. So how do you get past
like
all that?
What I like to think about is good mental health. You know, what can be done proactively with one's children, say, and one's family, in order to not make the children feel as if they can't participate in the fun that, you know, that the other kids are having. Certainly, you don't want to have that kind of a feeling. But to put it into perspective, without at the same time going into a major history lesson with a four-year-old, you're not going to be talking to them so much about the encounters between the living and the dead. So here's where I think there's a healthy movement in our culture toward making Halloween sometimes a harvest festival. Or making a time when people get together, they have the games, they have the treats, they have those group activities, but they are focused on things which are more related to the seasons, just like I heard you talk about, Val, you know, the idea of the ending of the summer, beginning of the autumn, that kind of thing. That's very understandable, and it does work in very well with many of the symbols of the season. However, there is still this undercurrent of danger, and I have seen it coming more and more and more just over the last 10 or 15 years, which I believe is the escalation on the part of the culture. The culture literally, our culture in general, the idea that there might be something dangerous in the toys that they get or the food that they get. There might be something dangerous out there. Clearly, traffic is dangerous, all of these things. So people are more and more and more, I think, shying away from more of the traditional trick-or-treating from house to house and going to these groups where they are having more of a, a group setting. But in general,
safer too.
Pardon me?
It's safer, too.
Well, that's why. That's why I'm saying it's safer.
Yeah, people don't want them out there. Yeah.
It's healthier. But when we talk about fear in general, there's very little that's more fearful to a small child than some of the traditional fairy tales.
Mm-hmm.
And if you really read, you know, Hansel and Gretel and some of these things, you know, it's like, oh my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize that these stories have been told to children from, you know, time immemorial. But the idea is that it was a different culture at that time. And the dangers were different. The world was a different place. Now all you have to do is turn on the television. You have really, really massive things to be fearful about.
Yeah, so that's true.
So fear in general, how do I think one can counteract it? There are many ways, but one of them is to be cognizant of the chakra system and to realize that grounding, just as you mentioned, Val, is so very important. Deep breathing, centering, meditation, walking a labyrinth, if a person is involved with being with friends, this could be good if you have some sort of, some little group activity that you might want to have that would make everyone feel, you know, safe and secure. This is, you know, I think preferable. And one could then, for yourself, exercise is one of the best things I know of for grounding.
Oh, yeah.
Also. Good diet, of course, and rest are absolutely imperative. And the thing is that people come to someone such as myself, you know, often with mystery maladies, things that the usual medical community doesn't have an answer for. And they'll come to someone such as myself as a medical intuitive, and what you can see is this combination of factors that are causing then to be an escalation, sometimes a kindling of the physical problems because of emotional factors, which I call them shadow memories that are connected together, and then as one event occurs, then other memories are brought forth and other physical physiological responses occur. The example that I like to give is the idea of if you and Val, if you and Mark could participate with me just a moment, if you can imagine that you have a lemon in your hand, just a beautiful yellow lemon, and that you can imagine taking a knife and cutting that, and then imagine taking a slice of that lemon and just squeezing it onto your tongue. What happens?
Lemonade.
Yeah, but can you feel saliva?
Well, salivate. Your body salivates.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure. Right. Well, that's a physiological response just to the image. So whenever we have a fearful image, whether it's in a movie, and especially if it's a movie with a big screen, we can't get away from it. Or sometimes just the sound of it. If you think of the sound that they play, the song that they played in Jaws, you know. And you can feel then your stomach going into spasms. You can feel the hormones of adrenaline churning. And it's that type of a physiological response which needs to be toned down. And so what I suggest is replacement memories where let's say a person has post-traumatic stress disorder or something that is maybe related to that or might even be just on the brink of that, maybe not full-blown but close, then one can try to replace the fearful memories with images that are less fearful. And in that case, I have seen it work in order to change the distortion in the energy field, because the energy field really does become distorted. And it is, unfortunately, sometimes that distortion, which then immediately will lead to malabsorption in the intestine. It will lead to autoimmune problems sometimes, all kinds of problems.
Well, let's just cut through a little of these maps because, you know, a lot of times when people talk about their fears, I mean, like you say, they're real for them. There's the metaphysical level, there's the physical part of it, and it seems like these two realms have different interpretations of the same event. And what I'm trying to get at is the common denominator is anything that provides you with a fear-based experience gets you in touch with your mortality.
That's right.
Which if you do not have a map of your immortality, puts you in peril. So you have no place to go. And because people live that closed identity, very linear life, where they're told a million things about death, we talked about it before you came on the air, and they're unable to get past that block because it's an inevitability. So knowledge of the chakra system, all these other things that come up, are well and good, and they're great practices, and over time, you could probably move some of the moos that we call the moos, people under that middle of that bell curve that do conventional things, pop pills for fear, you know, get really kind of stuff it in their bodies a lot. You could teach them some relaxation, you know, they could do some meditation. They might even start to pray. Well, many of them would, right? But
right.
When you get them right up against their mortality, especially when death comes from outside and touches them through, you know, other people's lives ending suddenly and things like that, and the unfairness of it all sometimes, and you know, we're in the middle of two wars here, and you got, you know, 4,000 troops dead, you got 3,000 people in the towers dead, a lot of death. I mean, my kids, you know, 40 minutes away from ground zero here, and it's a consciousness. So death doesn't have any province in any philosophy or religion. It's an inevitability. So how do you get past that block where people have to come up with sort of a story to tell themselves about death while they're alive to make death less fearful?
Well, of course, in times previous, it was when families were not so fragmented and when the elders lived with everyone else, it was not unusual for people to see people dying. And this became, or was, just accepted as a normal part of, you know, the cycle of things. Nowadays, with people who die more in isolation, we are in an environment that is very death denying. However, in my profession, this is a marvelous thing because, of course, in my training, I'm trained as a medium as well, and also in my own experience, I have moved beyond that. So I really have no fear of death. It's like one of my great mentors, Dr. Kermit Long, once told me, he said, I'm not afraid of dying, I just don't want to be there when it happens. So it's I have no fear at all of death because I know for a fact that there is continuity of at least some level of consciousness. I can give you just one anecdote if you would be interested.
Yeah, sure. I need all the metaphors I can get about death and whatever
you
give me.
It's not a metaphor. It's not a metaphor. It's an experience.
Okay, fine.
What happened to me years ago when I was working with one of my the physicians that I worked with, and he gave me just patient numbers, and the individuals in the room with me who would ask me, I would be in a deep trance state, and the individuals in the room would not know the doctor or who these people were. And they gave me this one patient number, and I was to connect with this individual and do a reading. Okay, all I would have is a number. I wouldn't know name or anything or live, dead, or whether they were ill or not. Okay, I encountered this one, and all I saw was a brilliant light, just a bright, bright light. I couldn't see the person clairvoyantly like I usually did. And I was told in my inner mind that this person was in remission and that they were about to have a party and that this was fine. Well, I said that, and it was all transcribed and eventually the next day sent to the physician who graded all of my comments, came back as wrong. And then I got a call from him a few days later, and he said, well, when was it that you did this? And I told him, and he said, well, at that time, that woman had just died.
Wow.
She had ovarian cancer, and at the time I gave you the number, I, as her physician, thought that she was very ill with ovarian cancer, but at the time you actually did the reading, she had just died. So I can tell you from first experience that I had seen and witnessed what happened. I have also had other experiences, many, 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 over the many years, where I have actually had intuitive connections with other people who have passed over. So this is something that, for me, and I can't expect anybody else to believe it, because it's like a lot of other things where they're firsthand experience, and it's hard to take somebody else's firsthand experience. But I can tell you that for me, I know that there is continuity of at least some level of consciousness, and I know that that lady, when she passed over, was in remission, and they were ready to have a party for her. And all it was this fabulous, gorgeous, intense light. So that's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
Well, I mean, this is one of those things where, you know, you get into, like, what John Edwards' work's been about, and there seems to be such a, I don't know, we want to call it a market. We talk about fear-based business, you know, fear business. There's definitely a market for dealing with mystery.
Oh, absolutely.
That you've seen, you know, sort of almost like, you know, put on steroids the last couple of years with things like The Secret and The Bleep People, and, you know, they're everywhere. Power, Law of Attraction, you know, they give you a very sort of one-sided map. They're not there, by the way, when the map breaks down. And what happens, what I see people that buy into those things, is that they become more gullible, not less, over time, because it's almost like a gambler. It's like they've already gone way off the reservation, and they've put all their heart and soul into this belief system thing. And you're talking about a direct experience that you had, that you had some training to develop some affinity for. I mean, people that work with remote viewing and all the Casey people.
And I do work with remote viewing, yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I,
the Casey,
you know,
people. Yeah.
For me, all my life, it has been my primary fascination. So from the time I was a very small child, I was working on my intuitive abilities, my abilities to go into trance. So, you know, so all of these things were things I was doing from the time I was very little.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it. So that it's like I was drawn to it from very early. But I know exactly what you're saying, and I personally don't believe in a lot of the I think a lot of the quick fixes and easy fixes and people saying, oh, just think more positively and this is going to happen or that, don't necessarily pan out. But I do feel that it is extraordinarily important for each and every one of us to be cognizant of the way we are sometimes manipulated by the culture, the hype, and it firsthand experience in whatever form we happen to seek it is, I think, preferable. But of course then, that's the more mystic approach, I suppose. And true that easy fixes are easily obtained. There's always going to be somebody telling everybody what to believe, but that always comes at a price, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, like I say, you see the cult outcome, that people go for the comet and the whatever, the Jamestown. There's always going to be a bunch of gullible people, like I said, that they've lived their lives soaked in these fears of all their mortality stuff. They all want to be saved. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you even go into the stuff about September 11th, it was the story behind it, which I don't particularly buy into, about these guys were kamikazes, promised something in heaven or whatever it is, and that's why they bought into it. I have a different story on that one, but it's just that mentality that the afterlife is better than this life. And why wouldn't if you truly believe that, and we did see that movie Religionless. I don't know if you got a chance to see Bill Maher's movie.
I haven't had a chance to see it yet, but
okay.
I've heard.
Well, there's a scary underbelly in this society that if you just take them at their premise, at their word, the afterlife is better than this life, okay? Just take them at their premise. And it's sort of a Santa Claus thing. Instead of being good to Christmas, you have to be good your whole life, and then you get to go to this, party in the sky. And if you're not so good, then Santa Claus sends you down. It's very up or down, black or white, very kind of like, there's no middle ground. They actually got rid of purgatory when I was a teenager. They got rid of purgatory, took that middle ground away. I was gonna hang out in purgatory forever.
You were hoping for limbo, huh?
I was hoping, well, it's like George Carlin says, you can't go to limbo, nobody's there. So these constructs that we try to rebuild this world into another world, and then create behaviors and laws and societies around it, is sort of becoming kind of rapidly, it's like the shrinking soap. The soap that gets used in the house gets used up the most. Everyone's been using that soap for a long time. That soap's getting pretty small, and we're getting dirtier and dirtier because we, like I said, that gambling thing. I have to remove this fear of mortality, that I'm going to die someday, and instead of living in the moment and being able to understand that there's a cycle here. We talked at the top of the hour about the way ancient societies, kind of honored the seasons and things like that. We create a lot of, kind of manipulative maps that cause people to sort of just function like lower animals, really, out of lack of options. So just, kind of wind it down for us tonight. You have a unique skill, the intuitive skills. We talk about social intuition a lot with our work, being able to kind of resonate with other people and not so much read their thoughts, but sort of get into the way that they are moving within themselves, and then you can communicate at a deeper level, sort of the open-heart listening kind of stuff. Even just the world of dreams are filled with a lot of fear, the way that the psychologists attack those things. I mean, Val could testify to that more than me, but, the archetypes are coming to get you, Barbara.
I work with dreams as well, mm-hmm. as not necessarily from a psychological approach, but
right.
I really believe we have many choices in this existence. And one of the best things a person can do, I think, is to empower their children and other young people to make those choices which seem to serve them best. And
mm-hmm.
not dictate to others, yes, this is the way it is, this is the way it is, and you've got to believe this or else. I feel that it's very important, however, for people to be given the options to read widely and to study widely and to talk to people from many different belief systems and see what really, really feels best for them. Because I don't think it's necessarily a one-size-fits-all world.
And even within one person. I mean, what made me afraid when I was five doesn't get me now.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is that, you know, it is, I feel, one of the most important priorities that anyone can have, and that is to come to a sense of peace within themselves, some kind of harmony, inner harmony, with these questions.
Yeah, like, again, they linger in the air your whole life because things happen that are unexplainable, and sometimes you have to say, you know, I'll tell my daughter, stay tuned. You know, it's like the Batman show. It's like, you know, it's a half-hour show, and Batman's trapped, and he's hanging over a vat of oil, and it's, stay tuned, you know, same bad time. You don't know. You don't have all the information right now. So I think we have a frustration with ambiguity because of all the mixed messages we get from the secular, non-secular, you know, anti-secular, counter-secular. You know, there's so many things barraging your head. By the time you're 25 years old, you're full of a bunch of spyware that you got to kind of tease out. Then you have your own direct experience to sort of kind of balance it out. And by the time you're in your 40s or 50s, you're going, screw all this. I got a mortgage to pay. I've got these kids here. You know, you go back to a very kind of like almost disconnected life. So I just, you know, I guess to kind of close out the interview, what do you think that taking our Halloween as the cue here, what do you think is the number one way that we can kind of bypass a lot of these misconceptions and kind of steer to a very direct relationship with immortality, with things that are timeless, with things that are seamless in all the cultures, so that and all the things you've studied, you know, we focus on things like breath, you know, something like that.
That's spirit to me.
What do you guys do?
I focus on the moment.
Okay.
Because there really is no guarantee of another moment. And so I don't really necessarily have to look as far ahead as to what's going to happen when I die. It's more important, what am I doing now to fully live right now? And as long as we focus on today, right now, how to be truly, completely aware, informed, alive, I feel that the tomorrows will take care of itself.
That's a trust that you have to cultivate through time, and I definitely think you've done your due diligence to get there. Hopefully a lot of people can join you, because you've got a lot of people that are living in the past, that are fearful of the future, and they don't have a present. They have an absent because they're never there. They're never in the moment. I could have people just sitting still in an office here and just have them close their eyes and look up to the ceiling, and their eyelids are flapping like they're just Venetian blinds because they don't have what I call a guiding image. They don't have a guiding image of what's in their head. They're all flip-flops. So someone has the clicker in there. And so getting them back in touch with the physical, with the mortal, the temporary
being
is
alive,
good.
And as you mentioned, the breath is the connection to life. It is that which is the animating factor. But the idea is the only time we can impact is the present.
Right.
Therefore, if we live in the moment, the most grounded, centered, loving, and gentle we can, then the rest, you know, is the rest. But it's something about which we have no control other than just now. So that's
moment happens to be filled with fear, fill it. But then let the next moment come in, and the next moment might have absolutely no fear. You don't know. But what people do is they get locked in.
Mm-hmm. But to me, if I'm really breathing deeply and am wide awake and truly alive, there is less fear. The fear comes from the unknown, and it's more fearful for that which is unknown.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. There's the people that are okay with being surprised and people that don't like to be surprised because they're jumpy. And my startle response would frighten most animals in the Bronx Zoo here because it's pretty healthy. But I keep that spring pretty tight because when something surprises me, my body reacts. As if my mind reacted, I'd be in trouble.
Sure,
So I don't divide the two. I'm just saying I keep it. The more you can keep these experiences physical and tangible and sort of overt, then they lose their charge. The more they become subtle and backgroundy and sort of murky and iffy, then they kind of tease you, and you're not able to kind of be present in the moment because you're always in that, like, contingency. But that's really how terrorism works. It's like, what is right there.
That's right.
What if is who knows. And if you're so spending your time and your attention on what if, what is going to knock you over. It's like Wile E. Coyote, you know, there comes the truck. You know, so thanks for joining us tonight here. We're going to take your words of wisdom here and try and get a run in the ninth inning here for the Tampa Bay Rays. And
oh, geez.
Oh, well, it's a pleasure to meet both of you, and thank you so much for asking
thanks,
me
Kate.
To participate.
Yeah, we'll talk to you down the line. Hopefully we'll have you back, you know, next time we need some guidance on this level. You've been a great guest, and thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Travel light. All right,
that's
put the
a nice
TV
lady
on.
There.
Very nice lady.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was, you know, kind of following her way through the spiritual jungle. Now, the father on the mound has not lost a damn game all year. A damn game all year.
Oy vey. All
right. You got the sound on you?
No, you got to put it on because Rick's asleep.
This is going to be a blood feud. This is horrible. This is like a guy completing a perfect season. Perfect season! I'm a Mets fan. Our bullpen could not get through any inning without having a problem. This guy's been perfect all year. And it's just too much to ask for the Rays to score here and tie the game. And if they do tie the game, of course, the Phillies will figure out a way to score in the bottom of the ninth to beat them. The two-strike pitch to Longoria as half of the insane world of Philadelphia is in the stadium. Outside. See, he throws this junk, this simpleton up on the main. He's given up home runs, by the way, that are monumental. But not this year. Not this year. This year he's on like a freaking, like, pay the devil. Maybe we could call K-back. Maybe he did pay a devil that could be this good. Inside, 2-2 to Harvey Keene. The key somatic pitch coming up. This is the pitch where they're not going to be conscious of the outcome. They've had four pitches. They've gone through the interfaces. Now we're in the fuzzy zone of who influences who. Yeah, freaking! I hate that guy. They just showed worth. I have a reaction to him. He's a vampire. I can't stand that guy.
Hey, I like vampires, but I don't like him.
Oh, he gives you the creeps.
Yeah, he really
does. He looks like a guy that you'd find someone dismembered in his refrigerator. I'm sorry.
He's like a zombie or something. Like
he has that look in his eye. Like it's a very weird Anto face.
Yeah.
He's a freak.
Yeah.
Oh, freak.
Yeah, I'm not like
that. The 2-2 pitch coming again. Come on. Longoria, do something here. Off balance. Got him out in front. One out. You know, part of me says the Phillies winning it sort of sticks it in the Mets' ribs a little more because they basically lost out to these guys by two games. And they had such an easy ride in the playoffs because the Cubs got upset by the Dodgers. But they're going to win this game beating an ex-Met. It's so poetic. It completes the cycle. But I'm not giving in. We got two more outs. Somebody get on base. Strike one. This guy's going to have a perfect year. What are you going to do with a guy like this? What, are you bronze him? Anyway, I learned a little bit about fear from our guest there.
Yeah? What was the best information you got?
A little tidbit? Well, I mean, I asked about three times about inevitability. Strike two. This guy's got no shot. Navarro? I think he's a Philo. To check my roster. Ugh, it's a horrible swing. You know, you gotta... If he ever gets a guy on base here, it's 50-50 that he's going to bounce one. That's what I'm saying. Oh, God. I'm getting such a knot from this guy. The learning I got out of this, in a nutshell, was that keep adding maps. I mean, it's almost like you're patching kind of a hole in your mental well-being with all these different stories. Drop ball. And a base hit to right field for the swinging Philo. Ooh, Brad Lidge. Little pucker. You see the way he looked at that? Like,
that's not supposed to happen, man.
I fooled you. A broken bat bloop. Now comes Rocco. Right? Rocco's up, I think. Ooh, wouldn't that be a poetic thing, huh? As Rocco launches one deep. Let's see. Pinch runner for the save? Yep. See, now, I don't understand why they didn't try this last inning when they had a guy on first and nobody out. That they didn't bunt him over. They didn't steal nothing. It's just sick. It's freaking 20 degrees out there.
Yeah, it's
so anyway,
cold.
To get to my circular reasoning here, is that she had all these maps. She understands the chakras, and she knows how to do the labyrinth. And she did the woo dance. She learned intuitive healing, and she learned some physiology, apparently. So she desensitized herself by fear by sort of kind of weaving between the physical and metaphysical till she kind of sewed that together in her head, and then she had some direct experiences that allowed her to, like people that have NDEs and things like that, that sort of removed, you know, the barrier and lifted the veil. And then the more immortality you can get a hold of, the more things you understand that are eternal about you, the less you're sort of protective of the things that aren't.
Uh-huh.
That's pretty much what I got out of it.
Huh.
One ball, one strike. Who's this safe that's up? Pinch hitter? Can't get a beat on his face. Oh, God. I just threw up in my mouth.
Oh, that's nice. Ah! Look at
who's
those
up?
Eyes.
Zobrist is up.
Oh, what do we got? Yep. There you go.
All right, stolen base. See, they should have done that last inning. That moron, they could steal on this guy all day. They could probably steal third on him now. The other night, they stole third. The guy threw it away. He threw it in the left field. I would run all out of this bastard. It's not so. See, you've got a guy up there that throws nothing but sliders. And a slider is a pitch that has a lot of spin on it. It's cold out. You know, his hands aren't that warm yet. He's going to bounce a couple of those things, and you're going to get a free pass. You're going to be on third base with one out. I mean, forget about his invincibility here for a minute and play the damn game. As we move to 5-10.
God.
This is what they were doing last inning. My statement for them last inning.
At 11, pay more at the grocer, but get in touch. We'll tell you how to get the most. What are you doing?
We have 4 minutes remaining.
Yeah, no problem. Once again, well, I can't throw the ball any faster than Brad Lidge can, so we're Soma casting here, a little emergency Soma cast, showing up the World Series here. We might be able to tie it before we go off the air, I hope, as Brad Lidge once again has put himself in a pickle, but he's invincible. He gets out of these things like he does a Houdini. I've seen him do it like 20 times. He'll load the bases. He'll do all kinds of crap and then get out of it. Got to stay in. Keep your shoulder back. Go to the opposite field. Oh, it's a line drive. Caught. You see what I mean? You got to be kidding me. The guy is invincible. He just got tattooed.
Yes.
I mean, he hit it hard. It's like, you know, 90% of the time that ball's going to drop in. And here's that freaking freak. Scoops in. Little vampire. Oh, man. See, now, if he had stolen third, he scores on that play.
And Eric Hinsky will bat for Portland.
This is it. Two outs. Here comes the meeting. Oh, this is vomitous. I have absolutely no stomach for this.
I love that
word. Oh, it is just horrible. Well, we're going to join you again Tuesday night for the election. Hopefully we'll be in a better mood by then. I would have maybe passed some gas by then and expelled the vile aftertaste of a Philly win here. I'm really hoping for a two-out loss. I'm really hoping, like, for this guy's had. I can't stand the luck this guy's had. It's incredible. The sheer, like, audacity of this man. 6 months, they can't beat him.
Well, home run would work right now.
Oh, any... No. Don't get greedy.
I am.
Just tie the game.
No, get the home run.
Well, sure. Make
Here
it simple.
Goes. Here
yeah,
it goes.
Yeah, right. You're out of your mind.
Well, no.
Look
we'll
at this.
See. Wait.
Yeah, you should ground out meekly to first and in the World Series now. Thanks a lot. Thanks for checking me.
Come on now.
Come on now.
Nice.
And then next Wednesday we have a nice guest coming in talking about sustainability with the environment, focusing on the bodhman, on the body.
Who's coming?
EJ Winsing from Canada and from some other island somewhere. Virgin Islands. He goes back and forth from ice to beach.
Yeah, man.
Joining us. I met him at the Chaos Conference. Cool dude. There we go. The 0-1 pitch to some shape I can't see.
Oof.
Ooh, he didn't swing at that, did he? He gives him a strike. Oh, you bastard.
That
what, do you
got to
get off the
close.
Air by 10 o'clock like us, you rat? The slider. You see, now, if the guy's standing on third, if the catcher misses it, it's a tie game. I'd steal third. You could steal third walking there. I would never. That guy should not have stopped running at second base. He should have been standing on third. Because you're still only one run down. Home run ties it or something here. Here's the 0-2 pitch. We got a minute left.
Oh.
That's it.
Look at that.
That hit me right in the freaking. Oh, this is like agony.
Don't pile on the
agony.
Right.
Agony.
Jeez.
Oh. On that note.
Pardon, fuckface. So long, you fetus-faced windbag. Good luck managing a Denny's, douchebag.
Oh, man.
All right.
That's
we'll
tomorrow.
See you on election
and
night.
That is it for us today.
I'll leave you with Bill.
Whatever it is, it's not right on the teleprompter.
What an absolutely
what that seen that.
Horrible night.
Yeah,
happy freaking Halloween. I think I'm going to go as Jimmy Rollins.
I can't read it. There's no words on it. Okay.
There you go.
Look at this. The Philly
there's
fanatic.
There's no words
too.
There. To play us out. What does that mean? To play us out.
I got to go throw up. Travel light.
Yeah.
See you next Tuesday.
Bye.
11 o'clock.
I don't know what
night.
That means.
Did
to
you
play
say
us
see you
out.
Next
what
Tuesday?
Next Tuesday night.
And
yeah.
See you next Tuesday.
Yeah. I said see you next Tuesday.
All right, go.
Oh, we have to talk about that line.
What does that mean?
That's tomorrow, and that.
Oh,
is
right.
Bye
bye.
That's tomorrow, and that is it for us today. And we will leave you with a. I can't do it. We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live. Fuck it. Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live.